We are in Boston. We're at the Sheraton, which has been the headquarters for the last 2 days of an organization called One Mind for Research, the Next Frontier of the Brain Forum, imagining the next decade of neuroscience research and development. There was an additional day today over at the Kennedy Library. And the co-founder of this organization is Garen Staglin. Let's just very carefully get into who you are, why you are, why you did this, and where you
Okay.
think it's going.
All
So,
right. Good.
because tell me your story.
My story. Well, I am a son of an Italian immigrant, so I come from a rich history of family, comes first, and a great sense of appreciation for our country and the opportunities that it gives us. I'm the first person to graduate from college in my family, which used to be called Stagliano. Yes, my
Stagliano.
father came
Is
through.
that like Stallone?
No, it's Stagliano. It's a little prouder history than that. Has a little more ring to it as Stagliano. But they all went to Rochester, New York. My dad left, ended up marrying my mother in Lincoln, Nebraska, where I was born. When we left when I was a year old, I went to Southern California. In high school, I decided to become an engineer around the challenge that happened with the Sputnik. So there's some great symmetry here to what we're doing,
Moonshot.
the moonshot and that whole thing, because it galvanized our country in a way. So that experience really resonated with me. I went on to go to business school at Stanford, get married, serve in the Vietnam War. Went to the Pentagon, worked for McNamara in the WizKids Systems Analysis Group, worked for Kissinger, went in the venture capital business, came back to California, and have had a couple of successful experiences with companies, which positioned us to buy a vineyard and then turn our life to the things that we really want to do. That's the most important thing we want to do, and the reason that I'm here as a part of this is that my son, during his freshman and sophomore year, typical of the incident time and point in time in their progression of these illnesses, had a first psychotic break. We were in Paris. We were on a trip. We thought it was the wrong number. We raced home, rescued him from jail first and then the hospital second. Got the right diagnosis for him, used resources that we had, got him back on track. His will, his intelligence, and his just not willing to take no for an answer caused him to be able to go back to school after a semester. He graduated on time with honors, still suffering quite a bit, but still pushing through.
This is schizophrenia
Schizophrenia.
diagnosed as. But how did this manifest in the first place? I mean, what was.
Well, knowing what we know now, I will tell you that he was always so bright that we thought this was just the Einstein effect, the absent-minded professor. He couldn't sleep at night. He was socially withdrawn. He was agitated about certain things. And it's very hard to separate those things that teenagers do than versus things that people that are progressing on the prodrome of schizophrenia do. But we have a much more trained eye today. But we didn't see all that. He went off to Dartmouth College, had a great freshman year, broke up with a girlfriend. Stress is always the environmental trigger that puts these illnesses over the top. He was having trouble finding a job when he came back for the summer. We were gone. He was picked up on the freeway driving a car erratically. The police thought he may have been drinking or having drugs. He told the guy that I just lost the right side of my brain, so he told the cop. So it was his way to portray what had happened to him.
So this is interesting in the sense that if Patrick Kennedy, who was
Yes.
your other co-chair,
Yes.
this is no secret, one can look it up on
Yes.
Wikipedia,
Yeah.
went through a series of very turbulent
That's right.
episodes, also picked up
Yeah.
driving a car into something at one night,
Yep. Yeah.
history of alcoholism,
Yep.
addiction,
Right.
mental disturbances.
Right.
You'll forgive me, but it's not a great surprise that the two of you are putting together something which is
It's personal.
Promoting the use of neuroscience.
It's personal. Yeah. It's personal for us.
And it's very personal.
And to do something of this scale takes passion.
Yeah.
And passion comes from that kind of personal experience.
Yeah.
And reason to make
now,
a difference.
Now, your son Brandon, who I met yesterday.
Yes.
According to what I understand, is now, yeah. that's now...
He's in very good shape.
Tabled out.
Yeah,
he's in good
shape. Very high functioning. He's medically compliant. He will tell you that he has schizophrenia. He is not hiding it or not in denial of it. And he understands now that his ability to speak about it, his ability to be an advocate, is actually very empowering for him and for many other people. And so he's willing to discuss it and talk about it and help people by his own dialogue and his own willingness to be an advocate.
So interestingly, in the program, although there are lots of great scientists here are working the thing,
right.
The other thing I noticed that you had a number of people who exemplify what you just said, which is, I've been there, I've done that, I know what it's like, you don't, and I'm going to evangelize to you and tell you what it's like until you understand and do something to help.
Yeah, I think it's more than just that, though. I think when we put this program together, we didn't want it to be a conference about schizophrenia, depression, and bipolar.
Right.
We want it to be a conference about the human condition. So if you notice, the thematic chairs were not about an illness. They were about the human condition. It was about memory.
Yes.
It was about movement.
Yeah.
It was about the things that these illnesses cause to be deteriorating human conditions. So we started with that, and in order to put that in the right perspective, we have an advocate, a person who comes from that place to be able to talk about that condition. We had Peter Sack talking about his Parkinson's. We had Linnea talking about her bipolar illness.
Right.
You had Meryl Comer, who talked about caring for her husband with Alzheimer's. So this conference was not about, while science is the key to what we want from this conference, which is faster cures and better treatments, it was putting the science in the context of those cures and treatments to benefit the human condition of people who are real and not removed in the conference with them, so that this demand is urgent and proximate and real.
Now, a lot of these disciplines obviously need to cohere, they need to talk to each other.
Yes.
There needs to be more interdisciplinary work going on. I assume that that's one of the things that you were driving for.
Absolutely. You know, these diseases are so complex that you can't isolate individual scientists or even in individual scientific disciplines.
Right.
And while we had neurologists and we had people that study every aspect of the brain, we didn't have everybody in that room that will actually be a part of the solution. We have people in nanotech, we have people in physics, we have people in biochemistry, we have people in engineering that are, you have to be a part of this team, because this is the most complex scientific endeavor that anyone's ever undertaken. So we need a multiple disciplinary approach, not only because of its complexity, but because they will come at it from a non-traditional way.
Yeah.
They will approach the brain as an engineering problem or a nanotech problem,
circuitry
as opposed
problem,
to a circuitry problem.
Yeah.
And they have different disciplines. And who knows? They're going to give us something that's a breakthrough. It's an oblique approach to it as opposed to the head-on or traditional approach to it.
How did this start? Do you remember the phone calls? I mean, what happened?
You know, I think we could probably... Patrick and I began working together during the mental health advocacy program and the campaign. And he came to California. He met our family. I would come to Washington to help him with the politics of getting that passed and seeing other congressional people to try to have a rally for more funding. We got to become more and more friendly. About the middle of last year, he more or less started to indicate that he didn't think he was going to run for office, and that that was a decision he was weighing on. He finally called me to tell me from a taxi cab somewhere in Rhode Island that he'd made that decision and that he was doing that. That's very Patrick-like. And I said, well, so what are you going to do? He said, I'm not sure, but I know the time is right for me to do something bigger. So we came back to Washington in June, maybe it was May, for the 100th anniversary of Mental Health America does an event here. And he was at that event, and I just missed him, but David Sherman came and told me, he said, Patrick just came and got the entire crowd rallied. I said, well, what did he say? He said he is all excited about the 50th anniversary of his uncle, and that on the inauguration, the day of his inauguration, which is January 20th, we would be able to do something, would be a challenge about the next frontier. So I said, wow, that's pretty bold vision, and we should be thinking about that. So he called me later and said, I did all this, and I think we could do it. And so I said, well, let's sit down and talk about it. So in the May-June timeframe, we started planning this whole idea, and we laid out a seven-step plan of what we needed to do to get to this day at this time.
So this day being May
25th,
which is the day on which JFK made his...
The 50th anniversary of the moonshot speech.
We're going to the moonshot speech.
In the next decade.
Interesting piece in the Boston Globe today.
Yes.
About the conversation he had with Jim Webb, who was then the NASA administrator, saying, can we really do this?
Yeah.
I mean, this is not easy. I mean, should I really be even saying this at this point? So are you guys having any second thoughts?
No. I think, well, on the one hand, I will tell you this is more like 1,000 moonshots in its complexity.
Yeah.
That was a physics problem. This is a problem of circuits, biotechnology, brain chemistry. But we have more science. We have a plan, which I think you know that this conference was
the 10-year
really
plan,
was the beginning of that plan. And we've now got magnets with resolution that gives us the ability to look into the brain with clarity that we couldn't do before. We have neuroimaging techniques and circuit analysis techniques that actually allow us to watch circuits.
I talked to Carl Deisseroth, by the way. I talked to Mark Raichel. So
if you saw those demonstrations, they're just mind-boggling,
The
stuff that we can do. Mind-boggling in the fact we can do it, but also mind-boggling in the complexity of what you saw when you see how we're able to eliminate it. So, you know, do I think this is easy? No. But it's different than saying we don't have a clue. We just have a lot of emotion, and we're just going to keep banging our head on the wall until we get there.
Yeah, but what's the plan here? All right.
Yeah.
Amazing opening meeting.
Yep.
What next?
Okay, we actually, I closed that conference with commitments to those people and asked them to make commitments to us.
Yeah.
Commitments I made to them were the following. First is that we would maintain inclusivity in this campaign, which means we don't want to duplicate that efforts are out there. We want to be inclusive of efforts, but we need them to be of one mind,
right,
which means that together our voice is much more powerful, and together we will collaborate and excel in our activities. The second commitment I made to them is we'd be transparent in our progress. So we are going to report on what we're doing, how we're doing it through both web and social media. The third thing I committed to is that we would form a public-private partnership, bringing the pharmaceutical industry, led by Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, and the academic world and government, into a public-private partnership, much like the Semitec model that we did in our country many years ago to accelerate the advancement of science in semiconductors, and we're doing today in Europe with IMEC, which is a similar thing, that we will develop bylaws for pre-competitive IP sharing, molecule donations, and lab space sharing so that we can bring pharmaceuticals into the process and we can accelerate the execution of the plan. The first thing was to build the plan. So we've got that. We build a public-private partnership. The fourth thing we're going to do is actually create the first ever global web work environment for the execution of this plan.
Mm-hmm.
We have Google, Amazon, IBM, GE Healthcare, J&J and a higher cadre of people ready to do the data standardization and integration to put this entire plan up on the web and, more importantly, execute it on the web. So what people are doing will be visible to people on a global basis. The next thing I said we would do is actually develop a campaign that will be both public facing and also politically facing to actually provide the regulatory modifications that we need in order to accomplish this process. What I asked them to do was to think about what they learned, think about what they would do differently, think about who they would collaborate with, and help us figure out what are the 10 most important things we need to do first that will allow us to deliver cures, because we don't need to know everything in order to do important things. And we need to get to a level of where we triage and prioritize the science as we go forward.
So this is not the first. There'll be another one next year?
We committed also, and we announced that on May 24th and 5th, we're going to UCLA for the first anniversary of this conference.
Yeah.
On November 11th and 12th, we will go to the Society for Neuroscience and report on our progress.
Right.
And between now and then, we'll form that partnership at a meeting in Jackson Hole with the CEOs of the major pharmaceutical companies,
right,
which the invitations have already been sent, and people are responding.
Did you, I'm just very curious, was there anything in your family background or your teachers or your reading that made you got interested in science at all? Or was the event really the thing with Brandon? Or
well, the Sputnik thing, you know, I actually have a degree in electrical and nuclear engineering, so okay. I have some pretty good quantitative common sense. But my career has been in technology, investing.
But the initial stimulus, I'm trying to think.
You know, could I have told you 25 years ago that I would be in this place? Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you do things out of compassion and passion. You do things out of love. And you do things out of opportunity. And we have that opportunity. And it would be a shame for me not to use the resources I have and to do it in combination with the resources that Patrick has and to develop this very powerful combination of people. I mean, the surprise for me is how excited everybody is right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the energy is extremely high.
Yeah.
Famous scientist Helen Mayberg came up to me this afternoon. She said, "I am energized." She said, "I really needed this." She said, I was getting into a place where all this gloom and doom was getting me down. I can't wait to get back to my lab. I can't wait to call people. I'm going to get this done. And that's the kind of excitement that we have to give back to these people.
Yeah,
because
we have a nice conversation with Helen.
You'll
see that she said the same
thing. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, good.
Yeah,
well, it was a surprise to me when she came and said that. But that's the exciting. That's a great reward. Now we have to take that reward down those steps that I just outlined with you.
You have to be out of here in a very few minutes.
Yes.
But I have four questions that I ask a lot of people all the time. And I'd just like to get your answers to them just very quickly.
All right.
When he came into office, President Obama said he would restore, his administration would restore science to its rightful place.
Uh-huh.
You must have a sense of what the rightful place of science is to be mounting this kind of effort. What's the rightful place of science in society?
I don't want to tackle all of science. I'm ready to tackle brain science.
Okay.
And I think where I think its rightful place is at its current budget level in a coordinated way with this public-private partnership. I'm very pleased to tell you that Vice President Biden said that this administration endorses this campaign. I don't think I've ever heard the administration endorse any non-government campaign.
In fact, I asked Steve Hyman yesterday, what's the actual official status of this?
Yes.
And he said, well, I'm not quite sure, but that's an interesting thing if the administration is endorsing
this campaign. So I think the right place for science is in this kind of public-private partnership. I think science for science sake is something we can't afford today in this economy. But we can't afford not to invest in science, because entrepreneurship and the science that comes with the outcomes that will happen, we're going to create jobs. We'll create national pride, we'll create leadership, we'll put our country and take it out of the malaise that it's in, that we can't stop the leak at the bottom of the ocean and we can't stop the financial crisis, but we could sure as hell lead the world in unlocking the mysteries of the brain. And that's incredibly exciting. We can own that space. We just got to get about doing it.
Yeah. You've been a scientist, you know, philanthropist as well.
Yeah.
But you see lots of young scientists.
Yeah.
Think about your own career. Think about the trajectory. What would your advice to a young scientist be?
I would say it's kind of I'm an entrepreneur, not a scientist. And I think that optimism and entrepreneurship are this careful balance of believing that the impossible is possible and convincing everybody else to follow you while you try to figure out how to do it. And I believe that scientists should absolutely create that grand vision and go get it, and we'll help them get the money to do it.
All right. These are the last two. I'm thinking about history here, because I've talked to you before, and I know you have some sort of sense of history. If I gave you a time travel token and said you could bring up to the your vineyards,
yes,
your dinner table, anybody from history, anybody you want to ask a question of, anybody you're curious about, who do you think
you'd
like to
talk to? Who would that person be?
Who would that person be? Yeah.
I think it would probably be Da Vinci.
Yeah.
I think his complexity
with your background.
of thought, engineering, and everything else he accomplished, that'd probably be the guy.
Yeah.
I want to figure out how he did all that.
Last question.
Yeah.
Garen Stagman, what are you optimistic about?
I'm optimistic about the One Mind campaign. I'm optimistic about my family and how fortunate I am to be with them and have them. I get up every day being optimistic because it's a waste of time thinking anything else. Because I can't change the past, but I can sure influence the future.
Well, it's been great to be here with
you.
Thank you very much. Nice to
meet you. Good. Thank you.